and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is going to share her recovery journey with us, and I'm very grateful to have an opportunity to learn about experience, strength, and hope in facing illness and recovery. And with that, we have Jenny B. from the Turn Lost and Found group.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jenny, and I am an alcoholic.
Jenny.
My sobriety date is April 7th, 2022. I am a member of the Turin Lost and Found group. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I'm going to open up my story with two little stories that really showed me that there is a higher power, like proof beyond measure that there is a higher power. And this higher power has been with me throughout my entire life. When I was a young kid, we had a guinea pig named, his name was Claws, because he had really big claws. And so we used to let him run around our room, and our dog got a hold of him. Okay, broke his back, killed the guinea pig. We were really sad. My dad put it in the garage in his cage, and he was going to dump it later on that night. Well, me and my younger sister, we decided that we were going to go say our goodbyes to the guinea pig. And we went into the garage, and we were both crying. And, you know, then we put our hands on the guinea pig and prayed over the guinea pig. Well, this guinea pig jumps up and lives for another 4 years. Right there. That was not me. That was my higher power. I was young, I was in first grade, you know, so I had that experience from a very young age. And then my second is I ended up with COVID, and I pushed it a little bit too far, did a little more than I should have done, and I collapsed. And I saw a bright light, and I went to it. And the only way I can really describe it is just pure joy. Nothing else down here mattered. Nothing, I didn't want to come back. It was just pure joy. Then I wake up I heard my mother-in-law's voice that she had passed away about 6 months prior to this. And I heard her voice. She said, Jenny, it's not your time. Go back. Before I know it, I'm back. And I'm crying. And my husband had his hand on my wrist, and he was checking my pulse, and he was like, you didn't have a pulse, you know. And I looked at him, and he's like, why are you crying? I was like, I didn't want to come back, you know. So those are two stories that have proven to me that there is something much bigger than us out there. So I was born in Tennessee. I was raised in a very large family. I was the second of six, and grew up in a very religious home. Neither one of my parents drank. None of my relatives drank. Any family function we were at, there was no alcohol at. I never saw alcohol. I didn't even really know what alcohol was. I just knew that it was bad. You know, don't touch it. And so I was homeschooled until I was in seventh grade, and I went to church. So church was really my only way to the outside world, you know. But, you know, I was raised in a very religious home. And, for example, like, I would get grounded for listening to Star 94. And I could only listen to, you know, Christian music and such. And, you know, I was very, I had a relationship with my higher power at a very young age. I was baptized in third grade. And I continued going to church until I could drive. Once I could drive, I was like, ah, bye, see you guys later. And so that's kind of when, well, take it back, seventh grade, when I went to public school. So I was homeschooled, you know, I was in a bubble, protected. And I went to public school, and I was like, whoa, there's a whole other world out here that I did not know about. So, you know, I was immediately started getting into trouble. I mean, immediately started disobeying my parents. My mom's like, oh, don't date him because he's Catholic. And I'd be like, guess what? I'm going to date him because he's Catholic. And, you know, I wasn't, my parents were very strict, but I was also very manipulative. And I was able to get away with a lot of things that, you know, I don't know how I got away with it. Maybe, I guess because my mom had so many other kids to worry about, maybe. But, you know, I got away with a lot of things. So I took my first drink when I was 16 years old. You know, I can't tell you what it was. I didn't get the, oh, this is amazing feeling. But that was my first drink. That was my first experience with drinking. And it didn't really, you know, faze me. But I also started smoking cigarettes during that time. And my mom had a thing where she would search for cigarettes in my bags or whatever. And I had gone to the health department because I had gotten on birth control, and I was trying to be responsible, you know. Well, my mom was digging through my book bag trying to find cigarettes, and she found my birth control and immediately kicked me out, threw my bags out in the front yard in trash bags. And I went and lived with my boyfriend and his family. That's where I was introduced to alcohol. His family, they were big drinkers. They weren't alcoholics. They were just drinkers. They could drink and put a drink down. So that's where I was introduced to it. You know, we would have parties over there, and, you know, his parents, like, kids would, we would party with the parents, and, you know, they would make sure we were safe and everything. But, you know, I did notice that, you know, I would drink and I would want more, and they would have, like, one or two drinks, and I'd be like, okay, we're done. I'm like, well, can I have some more, you know, or either I would, you know, sneak and steal, you know, steal a little shot, and, you know, that was until I was about, well, I lived with him for a while. So a year later, I ended up pregnant with my oldest daughter. At that point, I thought that my life was over. You know, I was 19 years old, having a baby having a baby. You know, I'd already planned on going to school, what school I was going to go to, all this. My life was planned out. And here, you know, this baby, my decisions, had interrupted my plans. So I ended up, I had my daughter. She saved my life. She really did. And at about 15, when she was about 15 months old, now let me go ahead and say this. My dad, he was an amazing man, the best dad I could ever ask for. I mean, he was loved every single one of us individually. He worked while my mom stayed home and homeschooled us kids. He was just an amazing man. He had great faith, too. Well, when my daughter was 15 months old, my dad had a massive heart attack and passed away right then and there. This is 2005. And, at that point, you know, I was like, something changed. I was very angry at God. And I was very angry because I was like, why would you take someone away from my mom? You know, and they have been Christians. They've lived this amazing, you know, godly life. And then he's gone, you know. I was very mad about that. So And on top of that, me and my boyfriend at the time, we got married because we had a baby. That was the right thing to do down here in the, you know, the Southern Belt. So we did that. And about a month after my dad passed away, my ex-husband went to Iraq. And so I lived in an apartment. I was a single mom of my daughter. And I got really involved into outside issues. And I found myself scrounging for change for drugs. At that point, I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to do that. So I was able to kick that one. You know, I was able to kick that with no problem. So I was like, but I can drink. And that's legal. So I was like, okay, cool, you know. So that's really where it started in my early 20s. So started out just drinking, you know. I try to look back and be honest with myself. I never drank like a normal person, ever. So I continued to drink and my ex-husband came back from Iraq, and he was a different person. I was a different person. And so we struggled. You know, we were both big drinkers, so he didn't see anything wrong with my drinking. But I had changed. And anyway, so we were struggling. We decided to have another baby to fix the problem. Yeah, that doesn't really fix problems, but she's been a huge blessing, and she's a huge part of my story as well. So, shortly after, well, before I had my youngest daughter, I got a job, my first real job, where I was 21 years old, and I gave them a pink sparkly resume, y'all. Pink sparkly resume. That's where I was. That explains where, I mean, I really thought this is going to be amazing. You know, they're going to love this. I got the job. I mean, and people make fun of me for years and years afterwards. I was there for 8 years. That's really when my alcoholism really took off. It started, you know, just drinking at night, trying to control my drinking. You know, okay, I'm only going to drink at night. I'm only going to drink wine. And then it switched to vodka. And then I was doing shots of vodka. And then it got to where I would wake up in the morning shaking. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why I was shaking. I just knew I felt awful. And so, you know, I missed a lot of work. I would constantly lie, say, I've got this illness, you know. And my grandma died, you know, all those excuses that we come up with. Really, I was sick. You know, I wanted to drink, and I did not want to work. Drinking had taken control over me at that point. I just didn't know it yet. So I continued on with this path. I ended up losing that job. They warned me. And that's when I went to my first meeting. And came into the room of amazing people, sober people. They were great. Got a sponsor, picked up a white chip, and decided that I haven't done any of those things yet. You know, all these people have done all this crazy stuff, and I haven't done any of that stuff. So I don't think I'm one of them. I'm good. I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing. Well, I did that. And about a year later, I got a DUI, and then I was sentenced to AA. So I would go to my AA meetings and didn't hear anything. I could not hear the similarities. All I could hear were the differences. But I just couldn't get it, you know. Sometimes I would even say I was going to an AA meeting and go pick up little bottles of wine and drink in the parking lot, you know. Nothing wrong with that, not at all. So 2020, I decided to, this is going to be the first time I'm going to do something about this. Something's wrong, you know. Let me go back just a little bit. So the relationship fell apart. Got a divorce from my ex-husband. You know, we're great at co-parenting. We've done great with that. We're better friends than married. And two years later, I met my husband now. And thank God I did. He's not one of us. Thank God for that, too. So anyway, where was I going with that? Okay. So I tried to go to, I went to treatment center to detox. And I checked myself in, and I brought a big rolly bag, suitcase, you know, and I had all my stuff in it, my makeup, my shampoo, all of this stuff, and they were like, oh, yeah, no, you're going to dig it through my bag, throw contraband, and I'm like, oh, man, dang, I think I was able to keep, like, two pair of pants and, like, a t-shirt or something like that. They had to take the shoestrings out of my shoes, all that fun stuff. And so I was there for 5 days. On day three, I started feeling a little bit better. Started feeling better, you know. And I was like, okay, I want to go home now. I'm ready to go home. I checked myself in here. I'm gonna check myself out. They were like, no, don't work like that. You gotta stay here. Oh, really? Dang, you signed something, you know, when you came in here. All right. So begrudgingly, I stayed because I had to. And when I came out, everything was closed. The pandemic had happened. I thought I was going to get stuck in there. I was so glad I didn't. But everything was closed, and I had promised myself that I was going to go to AA after that time. But the alcoholism, my disease, told me otherwise. I looked up AA meetings around me, this, that, and the other, closed, you know, Zoom meeting. I'm like, I'm not doing any of that. You know, this is just, no, I'm not doing that. So I didn't. I stayed sober for maybe 4 months or so, and then I said, I can have a glass of wine. It all started with that darn glass of wine, always, you know, but I didn't know. I didn't know that I couldn't have just one glass of wine. Kind of didn't listen to anything that I'd heard in the rooms before. So that one glass of wine turned into a bottle of wine, turned into two bottles, and then there I go back to my vodka again. I like the flavored vodka, so I could just do straight shots. And at that point, my daughters were older. One was in high school. The other one was in middle school. My oldest daughter ended up moving in with her dad because she couldn't live with me the way I was behaving. So, you know, I'd lied to her many times because I would say, oh, I'm going to be sober, I'm going to stay sober, and then I would relapse. I ended up going to rehab twice more. So what brought me here, though, each time I went to treatment or rehab, I thought I'd hit my bottom. I really did. But in all reality, my last drunk, April 6th, 2022 was my bottom. It had all started with me going on a girls' weekend trip with a good friend and her daughter and my 15-year-old daughter. And she didn't know that I'd relapsed, and we were driving to Panama City, and I had my vodka in my Gatorade bottle in the cup holder in the car, and she's like, I'm thirsty. Okay, well, and I was like, don't drink, and before I could even say don't, she had it. She was gulping it. Shit. This is good. Well, she kept on and continued, and I let her. While I was, you know, drinking and driving all the way to Panama City. So we ended up, the first night we were there, I got so drunk, I was dancing to Get Low. Well, I couldn't get back up. I got too low, so I ended up breaking my ankle. All right? Yeah. It was great fun. So it turned out to be a huge big deal because I drive a stick shift. And so I had to call my husband, who had to call his friend, who, and my husband had a broken arm, so he couldn't drive my car either. I mean, so, you know, he had to get a friend to drive with him so his friend could drive my car home. Anyway, well, during that weekend, me and my youngest daughter got into it. She had snuck alcohol from the house we were staying at, and we got into a huge heated argument. And I was so drunk, I really don't even remember it, to be honest with you, but I know it was bad. And so husband came and picked us up. And 2 days later, right when we got home, my youngest daughter went to her dad's. And, you know, I was like, don't tell anybody about this. First of all, if don't ever tell the kid, don't tell anybody about this, there's something wrong with that picture right there, you know. But she did. I'm glad she did. She told her stepmom, and she told her older sister. And her older sister, my oldest daughter, Mackenzie, called me and said, I'm done with you. I'm done. I don't want to see you. You're not invited to my graduation. I never want to see you again. I want nothing to do with you. My youngest daughter was just, I can't believe you would let me do that. At that point, you know, I had lost both my daughters. My husband was extremely mad at me because of the extra work he had to do. My family was mad at me. Everybody, I felt like I had lost everything. And so, in my mind, I was thinking, well, I'll be better. People will be better off without me. You know, I'm just going to, it's going to end my own life. And so, I decided to OD. And something inside of me said to call my sister. She lives in Virginia. And I called her and I told her what I had done. Now, thinking like, well, she's in Virginia. She can't call the cops on me because she can't call, you know. my thinking was completely skewed. But anyway, she ended up calling my brother who lives in our county, and he called 911. But something happened, and I had reached a point where I literally fell on my knees. I decided I didn't want to die anymore. And I fell on my knees, and I just cried out, God, please help me, with tears rolling down my face. And at that moment, something changed. The obsession was lifted. I was able to go to treatment center, to treatment, and with a clear head for the first time. And I made a group of friends in this treatment center. And I was like, this is what I need. I need other people who are like me. You know, I need other people that are like me. So when I got out of that rehab facility, first day, I went to a meeting. I did the 90 and 90. I got a sponsor right when I came into the program, started working the steps, and of course, you know, the first step was me, I'm an alcoholic, my life is unmanageable, that was very clear, you know, very clear, but I worked the steps, and about 18 months into sobriety, I found out that I had breast cancer. Now, it was obviously not expected. You don't expect any of that kind of thing. But in the very beginning, things moved very fast, very fast. And I knew that something, you know, like I believe in Godspeed. Like if something happens really fast, it's like bam, 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 bam. My higher power. And so literally doctor's appointments were scheduled like one day after another, and it just moved so fast. And I remember saying to my sponsor, like, this is moving too fast. This is kind of scary. Like, I have a feeling it's moving so fast. We don't know anything. We don't know anything, Jenny. We didn't. Well, I got the call, and hear something that just blows my mind every time I tell my story is, so I had agreed to share my story. It was a week before I found out I had cancer. I had planned that way in advance. The second time I shared my story was a week before I had a double mastectomy. Third time I shared my story was a week before I started chemo. And then this time, well, I told my story the other recently, and I just finished chemo. I finished chemo a week ago, a little bit over a week ago. And, you know, thank you. But being diagnosed with cancer was not a death sentence for me. My higher power and my group of ladies from Turin, Lost and Found, I mean, the support, the love, I don't know what I would have done without them. I had literally meals for 3 weeks straight at my door. I had a personal relationship with my higher power that I could cry out to him and call to him when there was no one else there, when all I had was my higher power. And he was my strength. And only through him did I make it through this. And, you know, it was not easy. It was rough. I still have a little bit to go. But, you know, only through this program, I don't have to drink, you know. Not even one thought of drinking crossed my mind throughout this whole journey, throughout the whole cancer journey. And, you know, I'm just so glad that I stayed. And I know that my story will help other people. So, you know, if you're here, you know, if you're new, if you're struggling, just keep coming back, because this program does work. And we're miracles. And just live one day at a time, because that's all we've got. And that's my story.
That was wonderful, Jenny. Thank you. We have asked Kristen to do the chips.
I'm Kristen, I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
All right, here at any viewers in AA, we have a chip system to mark our time and sobriety. The first one we offer is a white chip if you're new or just coming back. Anybody else need a white chip? We have a silver chip for 30 days. We have for 2 months a bronze chip. Any more? I'm on a roll. We got for 90 days, 3 months. All right, yellow, 6 months, sunshine chip. Yep. Green, 9 months, hardest chip to get. Blue, for year or multiple.
I'm an alcoholic. The girl is 14. 2010 is my actual sobriety date, but I haven't been here since then. I just want to let you know, Tim, this meeting has meant a lot to me throughout the years. I've gotten to tell my story here before. It's very nerve-wracking, and you did an amazing job.
Yes,
thank you so
yes.
much for your story. 14, if I can do it, all of y'all can do it. So thanks for being here.
offer the what chip one more time?
Wow.
Is that important? You know?
Well.
Right. Give God and sponsor the hand for the chip.
Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Surrender was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. Devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking, heartbreaker, you had me believe that you love me, but you gave me one match in gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. I should have seen it coming, but I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired. Well, good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. There are lessons I'm still learning, hearts I've broken, are still hurting. It's all because of you and the things you made me do. I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Oh, I didn't come here looking for the light. No, I came in here running from the fire.